This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Dear Show. A number of my letters said, all right, enough on Israel, talk about Trump. So not for that reason, but because there isn't a lot of news on Israel today. And there is some news both on Trump and on Hunter Biden. I am changing topics. And I'm sure the letters, I know the letters talk a lot about Israel, and I'll answer those. But let's start out by talking about the American public. The American public has the right to see Hunter Biden testify and to hear everything he says and to see the members of the House Judiciary Committee question him. It's not only his right, it's our right to see him. And we also have the right to see President Trump's trials. And there shouldn't be any sealing of the trials. And finally, there should be no gag order on Trump at all. Trump has the right to say whatever he wants to say. If he intimidates a witness, that's a separate crime. He can be indicted. But he's entitled to say the judge is a bum, the judge's clerk is a bum, and everybody on the staff is a bum. That's part of his free speech rights. And I don't believe him, but he's entitled to say it, and we're entitled to evaluate him based on that. What he's not entitled to do is intimidate witnesses or jurors. There are no jurors. The New York case involving real estate is only a judge who's already made up his mind. And he's primarily the one who Trump attacked. I've attacked him too. He deserves to be attacked. He made some outrageous, ridiculous rulings. And he has his clerk sitting right next to him, you know, a puppeteer and a puppet. Who's calling the shots? We, the American public, have a right to see that. We have a right to evaluate it. And what I'm concerned about is that commentators, including academics, do not understand the First Amendment. Everybody knows the First Amendment protects the right of free speech. Congress shall make no law abridging the right of free speech, or the right to, you know, gather and et cetera, et cetera. But the Supreme Court has held, and of course it's only logical, that not only does the speaker have a right of free speech, but we have the right of free listening. We have the right to hear what people have to say. And when a speaker's free speech is curtailed, our right to hear what he has to say is curtailed. And, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? And if a speaker speaks without anybody listening, what's that great Beatles song about the minister, Eleanor Rigby, the minister who writes the sermon that nobody will ever hear? That doesn't promote the marketplace of ideas. The marketplace of ideas is promoted when somebody speaks and somebody listens. And the president, former president, has a right to say what he wants to say. And it can be obnoxious, it could be disrespectful, it could be dangerous. But the First Amendment protects it all. And as Thomas Jefferson says, you know, the First Amendment allows falsehood to be corrected only by truth, not by censorship. And but he also said, if it crosses the line to criminality, then you can punish the first sign of any criminality. And if Trump were to intimidate a witness, he could be prosecuted for that. But we tend to forget that a criminal defendant, certainly a civil defendant in the real estate evaluation case, but a criminal defendant is presumed innocent. Anybody can be indicted. Ham sandwiches can get indicted. And certainly anybody can be sued. All you have to do is file a complaint. And the fact that you've been indicted or had a complaint filed against you should not change your legal status at all. Obviously, if you're very dangerous, maybe you can be detained. I have real questions about that sometimes. It's used very selectively, sometimes too little, sometimes too much. If you're going to escape, run away, and Trump's not escaping or running away, the biggest escape he makes is to Mar-a-Lago. But absent that, absent danger of flight, the status of an indicted defendant shouldn't be any different from anybody else. And as I said, there are criminal statutes that protect the process, and those criminal statutes ought to be used. But judges should have no power to impose a gag order, and certainly not the gag orders as broad as the ones in this case. I love the judge saying, well, you can say anything you want about me, but not my staff. Why not? They work for the government. You're allowed to criticize staff. Let me do that right now. Many staff members of Democratic congressmen and even senators have written and tweeted outrageous things about Israel, have been pro-Hamas and anti-Israel. They're staff members. If I knew their names, I would put them right up here on my show. I'm not going to protect a staff member. And a judge shouldn't be protecting a staff member. A staff member, you know, maybe it's not right to attack staff members. I think it is. It's certainly not right generally to attack family members, except if they've done wrong. And that brings us to Hunter Biden. It's generally not correct to go after the family of a president if the family of the president did nothing wrong. But if there is a suspicion that a member of the president's family did something wrong, especially if he did it with the president, then the fact that he's a relative doesn't immunize him from either public criticism or public investigation. And although I'm a Democrat and a Joe Biden supporter, I do think that special counsel should be appointed to investigate Joe Biden. Now, there is a special counsel, but that special counsel looking only into the issue of the classified material. And there's a special counsel on Biden, but that was an insider within the Justice Department, picked by the Justice Department. What I think we need now, and what I've argued for a long time, and if I were Joe Biden, I would want this too, because there's so much smoke out there. And if he's innocent, as I hope he is, he should want a special prosecutor, because he's not going to get a fair hearing from the Senate Judiciary or the House Judiciary Committee, certainly not the House Judiciary Committee, which is Republican. The last thing we want is the partisan weaponization of the criminal justice system, which is what happens when you have congressional committees investigating people of the opposite party. What we need is the most distinguished special prosecutor, and there have been some. Robert Fisk, when he was picked to investigate Whitewater, he was probably one of the most distinguished lawyers of his day in America. The same thing has been true of others who have been appointed and made special counsel, starting from, you know, Richard Nixon and others, Archibald Cox. What we need is somebody like that. And I've made a proposal. What I think is that there ought to be a group of academics or former judges, people who are not in politics. Too many academics are in politics, but former judges, people from both parties, and maybe seven or eight of them. And they ought to meet and create a list of five possible special counsel. Hopefully former judges. I mean, I'd love to see David Souter or Stephen Breyer or some former federal judge, not Judge Luttek, obviously, who's been one of the villains of this whole thing, calling for the president not to be able to run because he fought in the Civil War. No, I guess it's not that he fought in the Civil War, but he engaged in an insurrection. So he's obviously out. He's disqualified. But there are other former judges who have not been political. And I think this group should give the attorney general a list of five, and the attorney general should commit himself to pick from that list of five. So the person is a complete outsider, a nonpartisan person, somebody maybe whose party affiliations aren't even known. You know, Justice Harlan, when he went on the Supreme Court, he stopped voting. He didn't want any political or partisan views to be part of his thinking at all, or he didn't want the perception of partisanship to be shown. So he didn't even vote. Now that takes it too far. I know a lot of judges, obviously, classmates, students, people who I've known over the years, and I know who they vote for sometimes, but they're not involved in politics. But what we need is somebody like that. There are so many good people out there. Michael Mukasey would be perfect, former Attorney General of the United States. There are so many people who could be really, really independent special counsel, but we're not going to see it. And so what we're going to see again is the partisan weaponization of criminal justice. And we're going to see the, you know, Republican-controlled House look at situations one way and the Democrat-controlled Senate look at situations the other way. You know, when the Republicans were in power, the Democrats wanted to impeach them. When the Democrats are in power, Republicans want to impeach them. You can't take that seriously. It's partisan. There was one impeachment in history of a president that was justified, and it never came to fruition. That was Richard Nixon. He should have been impeached. I favored his impeachment, although I voted against the American Civil Liberties Union taking a stand in favor of his impeachment. I was on the national board at the time. But no other impeachments in our history of the president have ever been valid. Andrew Johnson was totally invalid. Bill Clinton was totally invalid. And both of Trump's impeachments were totally unconstitutional. So I'm not a big fan of the impeachment process or the partisan weaponization of criminal justice. But I am a big fan of fair justice. And I do think that we do need a special counsel to look into all the smoke. You know, there are so many allegations out there. You hear them every night on conservative television. I don't know whether they're true or not. I don't have the ability to investigate. But there's enough there to warrant a thorough investigation before the election. I want to vote for Joe Biden, but I want to know everything about his connections with Hunter Biden, with Ukraine, with China, with the money, with all of that before I make a final decision to vote. And I think every American has the right to know everything. And the only way we're going to know it is if there is a special counsel appointed. You know, they used to call it independent counsel, special counsel, but we know what it is. It's somebody from outside the Justice Department. If he decides to indict, that's the end. And if he or she decides not to indict, then they file a report. And the report can and should be made public by the Attorney General. And that will give us all the opportunity to make an evaluation. And if the evaluation shows that President Biden engaged in improper conduct of any kind, even if it's not criminal, but especially if it's criminal, that would affect my vote, and it hopefully would affect everybody's vote, just as the current indictments probably should affect the votes of people who are considering voting for Donald Trump. Now, having a conviction in the District of Columbia or New York shouldn't affect your vote, because that's not a fair venue for a trial of Donald Trump, and the cases against him don't justify a conviction. But if there were to be a conviction, for example, in Florida, in Palm Beach County, on the classified information, although I've called that a smoking cigarette butt, it's smoking. There's evidence. There's no question that the video of him waving material in front of a journalist and an editor saying this could have been declassified and it wasn't, it's still secret, that's smoking, but it's not a gun. It's a cigarette butt. It's a small matter. Nobody accused him of showing it to an enemy or actually showing the content necessarily to the person. But enough there probably to convict. Would it affect my judgment? Yeah, a little bit, not a lot. Did it affect my judgment that Joe Biden had classified material? No, because that seemed clearly to be an accident, that he just stuff was put and taken, and it was negligent. It was careless. He shouldn't have done it, and he should be excoriated for doing it. But it doesn't give rise to a criminal prosecution, and it wouldn't necessarily affect my own vote. You know, my vote will be influenced by the economy, by foreign policy, including Ukraine and Israel, China, Iran, Russia. Those are big issues for me. It will be influenced by immigration policy, by appointment of judges, and a range of other issues like that. That's why, although my presumption is always in favor of voting for the Democrat, because I like Democratic policies much better, a woman's right to choose, gay rights, reasonable climate control, reasonable gun control, a fair, less political Supreme Court, separation of church and state. These are my issues. And the Democrats support those issues more. I've said over and over again, if I lived in England, I'd vote conservative, not liberal or labor. I'd vote conservative because the Conservative Party has a strong foreign policy, which I support, strong economy, which I support, but it also favors a woman's right to choose and gay rights and all of the other issues that I've talked about. We don't have such a party in the United States. The Republicans are too much under the influence of the religious right. And for that reason, they're not a libertarian party. They don't believe in the government being in your pocketbook, but many do believe in the government being in your bedroom and on your deathbed. And I don't. I'm a pure libertarian, and I use that both ways. So I do favor a woman's right to choose abortion, certainly in the early stages of the pregnancy, and an old person's right to choose death with dignity and not have the state interfere, as many Republicans would have the state interfere with end-of-life decisions. So that's why I'm a Democrat. But getting back to the point at issue here, this is not about Hunter Biden or Donald Trump. This is about you and me. We have the right to see Hunter Biden testify. If he's going to testify, it shouldn't be down in the basement. Nobody should have anything to hide. We also have the right to see the members of Congress ask questions. Are they idiotic questions? As often they are. Are they good questions? Is the question being handed to him by his staff member? Or is he spontaneously coming up with it? We have a right to see all of that. We have the right to hear Donald Trump on every possible issue he wants to talk about. He's running for president, and there shouldn't be any secrets. And his trial should be open to the public, every single one of them. The civil trial in New York, the criminal trial in New York, the criminal trial in Georgia, the criminal trial in Florida. Every one of them should be open. The Supreme Court has begun to move a little bit in that direction when the Roe versus Wade overruling decision was argued, and along with some others. They have allowed at least live audio to come from the courthouse. I don't know why they're concerned about seeing the faces of the people if you're hearing their voices. Every government action, except if it involves truly classified material or national security material, should be open to the public. That's why, although C-SPAN is boring, it's a very important phenomenon in American life. C-SPAN means that we can see members of Congress. We can see members of the Senate. We can flip the channels and watch the empty hall and somebody trying to orate to the camera, knowing that there are probably 14 people watching him on C-SPAN. But it's a matter of public record. You can go to C-SPAN. If you want to see my speech in front of the Senate in defense of Donald Trump's not being impeached, just look it up on Google, and there it is. It's, you know, C-SPAN ran it. In that case, the other channels ran it as well. CNN, of course, misreported the whole thing, but that's fairly typical of CNN. But it wasn't my right to make that speech. It was your right to hear it and to criticize me, as some have done, or to praise me, as some have done. I was a public figure that day making an argument about the Constitution concerning a sitting president of the United States. It was a proud moment for me. It lost me most of my friends on Martha's Vineyard, but that's another matter, and even some relatives. But that's what lawyers do. That's what John Adams did. That's what Thurgood Marshall did. That's what I try to follow in their footsteps do. Of course, I'm going to defend the president of the United States if he's being unconstitutionally impeached. I defended the rights of communists and Nazis and murderers. And I didn't get criticized for that much, that was by some people. But of course, I defend the president of the United States. But everything should be public. I want everything in the open. As Justice Brandeis once said, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And it's a metaphor, and it's probably not true. But politically, it's absolutely true. If you see it, if you can hear it, it's less likely to be false. It's less likely to be extremely partisan. It's a protective mechanism, being able to listen and see your government in action. That's why from day one, I was in favor of televising trials. I argued the first televised appeal in history, I think. The Von Bülow appeal was, I think, the first appeal that was televised. And then, of course, I participated in the O.J. Simpson case, which was televised. Every minute of that was televised. You know, there's an interesting fact. There were polls taken after the verdict, very unpopular verdict. The vast majority of people thought he was guilty and should be convicted. Some people thought he was guilty and shouldn't be convicted. Some people thought he was guilty and shouldn't be convicted because the government tampered with the evidence. That's a matter for a different time. But the polls were interesting. It showed that people who actually saw it on television were less surprised by the verdict, the innocence, the not guilty verdict, that the people who actually watched it on television were less surprised by the not guilty verdict than the people who read about it in the New York Times or watched television analysis of it. Because when you see it directly with your own eyes, you have a much better sense of what's going on than seeing it through the prism of biased reporters. Almost all the reporters started out with the presumption that he was guilty and he would be convicted. And they were shocked when he was acquitted. But the people who watched it directly were not. And I think probably the same thing is true with people who watch congressional hearings on television and debates in the Senate and debates in Congress. They know more and they're less surprised. And that's why I am completely in favor of Hunter Biden testifying openly in front of television cameras. Why I am completely in favor of Donald Trump's trials, all of them being on television, and why I am opposed to gag orders in general against criminal defendants or civil defendants or plaintiffs. So three cheers for the public and the openness and the marketplace of ideas. And let's hope we see and hear more and have less and less censorship. Okay, some letters. How many innocent civilians have been killed in Gaza so far? I have no idea. And neither do you, and neither does the New York Times. Hamas may know, but it's not telling us. Hamas says, we have a number we're giving you. Believe it or not, it's a number. It was 12,000. And then I think it was during the truce period that it went up to 15,000. So I don't know what that means. But they don't distinguish between civilians and combatants. And it's not an easy distinction to make in general. But hypothetically, of the 15,000 people that were killed, 10,000 of them could have been combatants, for all we know. And the only reason they say they're not is because many of them were women and children. But by the way, I learned something new that I was not aware of. I thought that children were anybody under 18. No, no. The way Hamas counts, it's anybody under 19. So if you're 18 years and 11 months old and carrying an RPG or firing a rocket or digging a tunnel or raping and murdering somebody, you're a child. You're a child. Israel killed children, 19-year-old children, 18-year-old children, 17-year-old children. You know how many people that accounts for when you say children? And then they say, women. No, 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 you can't. If you have a vagina, you can't be a combatant. You know that, according to Sharia law. But of course, Hamas violates Sharia law all the time when it uses women as suicide bombers. In fact, it rapes women to make them into suicide bombers. So they have learned how to use women as terrorists. And the idea that there are women and children involved means there are no they're all civilians. This is just total nonsense. Only the New York Times would buy into that, and they did. Do you stand for the death penalty for murderers in the United States? My views on the death penalty are interesting. I think people who kill deserve to die. If I were, you know, the czar or the god or anything, if you've killed somebody deliberately and willfully, that's the deserved punishment. But the United States doesn't deserve to kill them because our system is totally unfair. Today, the death penalty is administered almost exclusively to very poor people and to largely to Black people who kill white people. Black people who kill Black people don't get the death penalty as much. And white people who kill Black people almost never get the death penalty. And it depends on how good your lawyer is. So I'm opposed to the process by which the death penalty is administered. But if you ask me the moral question is difficult and clouded. But the pragmatic political inequality question makes it easy for me. So I've been an opponent of the death penalty since I'm old enough to think about it, which was a long time ago. Were civilians killed during the bombing of the King David Hotel back in 1946? Very interesting question. So, you know, the King David Hotel was being used as the administrative center of the British occupation of Israel before Israel was established. And Menachem Begin, who was then the head of an organization called Irgun Tzvili Umi Etzel, it was an organization that resisted the British occupation. And Begin apparently gave warning to the British authorities to please clear out the King David Hotel of any civilians. And then it was blown up. The hotel didn't have civilians in the sense of just totally innocent people who were not involved in the colonial occupation by the British. It involved British military. A lot of them were killed. And British civil servants, and it was wrong, and it should never have been done, and it was widely condemned by Israelis and by the world, and it took Begin, I don't remember, 25, maybe 30 years to become a prime minister after that, because a lot of people couldn't forgive him for the King David Hotel, but the British were also engaged in killing civilians, that doesn't justify it any more than it does today. But the issue of the King David Hotel is a complex one, but I can't support it. I don't justify it. It was wrong. I don't justify everything Israel did. This wasn't done by Israel, by the way. This was done by a group that had been outlawed by the Jewish agency, which was the predecessor to Israel. So it was not done by the Haganah, which was the official military of the Jewish agency. This may not be the forum, but I'm trying to understand the Zionist and anti-Zionist. I do not understand how the animosity could be so strong. The anti-Zionists publicly denounce their own people and march with the terrorists. It's like family. You keep your divisions within the home and publicly stand together. Well, the Jewish community is standing together. The two groups or the three groups that call themselves Jews are not part of the Jewish community. Jewish Voice for Peace is not Jewish. Most of its members are not Jewish. They are communists and hard left socialists and radicals and America haters who use the title Jewish Voice for Peace in order to cover up who they really are. So there are a couple of Jews in there that the head of it is Jewish. And there have always been Jewish communists and Jewish radicals, and Trotsky was Jewish. So don't be surprised at that. And then there's this idiotic group called Nature Carta, which are extremely reactionary, anti-women, anti-gay, anti-everything, ultra Orthodox Jews who are anti-Zionist based on misreadings of the sources, of the Jewish sources. And I don't mind that. They can be anti-Zionist. But they support Iran. They support Hamas. These are a bunch of ne'er-do-well idiots. And they represent 1/100 of 1% of the Jewish population, but because they have beards and, you know, wear the accoutrements of Orthodox Judaism, people assume that they're Jewish. They define themselves as Jewish, fine, but they don't in any way represent the Jewish community. The Jewish community is fairly united on this. Now, there are hard left Jews who never think of themselves as Jews, except when it comes to criticizing Israel and Jews, and they say Jews for Palestine. You know, they're not Jews for anything else. They're not Jews for Jews. There are some of those, but there are very, very few. The vast, vast majority of Jews are very, very supportive of Israel. You have been my hero since you fought for the Nazis' right to march through Skokie. Oh, I was Jewish and 14 years old, etc. Of course, I loathe the Nazis, but the First Amendment is meaningless if it doesn't apply to all. I agree with what you're saying today. I think that Biden is shockingly wrong. I do not like Biden. His consistent hedging is simply, etc. He's playing politics. All right, you have a view on that. But, you know, my defense of Nazis was not supporting the Nazis, obviously. It was opposing censorship. I would oppose censorship of any group. I would oppose censorship of Hamas. I would oppose censorship of, the Ku Klux Klan. So it's not my support of any particular group. It's my strong opposition to government censorship. That's my position. The same was true of Donald Trump. My defense of Donald Trump did not show support of Donald Trump, even though the New York Times recently called me a Trump supporter. But that's the New York Times. I am a supporter of the Constitution. See you next week.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.